The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this championship edition of the Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by Denny Carter. We're going to take a quick spin through the week's news, evaluate the dynasty futures of some of the players who were eliminated over the weekend, and take a look at one key matchup in each of this Sunday's games. But first, Denny, I mean, the big news, the greatest player in league history was informing the media on Monday that he has been informed that he has a family. And that they are apparently worried about him taking hits, and that the man who would never retire, Tom Brady, is supposedly actually contemplating retirement. What do you think?
He's talking seriously about it. Not only that, Bucks head coach Bruce Arians came out Monday and said, we have to have a contingency plan, and we're putting one in place. I would have thought that they could have thought about that earlier, considering their quarterback is 44 years old, but apparently, it seems to be something that the team is prepared for. But this notion that Brady, and he said this in his interview on Monday, or on a podcast, he said this notion that he's being hit too much to continue. He's taking too much of a beating in the pocket. It's not correct. It's just not that it doesn't hold the water at all. No quarterback faced a lower pressure rate this season than Tom Brady. He was sacked an average of 0.7 times per game. Wow. He has the best.
Are you serious? Is that a real stat?
That's a real stat. That's 12 sacks in 17 regular season games. So what happened here, it seems like, is that he was sacked three times against the Rams in a loss. And he now is considering retiring because it's just the physical toll is too. Now, maybe three sacks on a 44-year-old body feels like, 20 sacks. I don't know. But it is something that he's citing that aspect.
You think he's just subtweeting his offensive line? He got sacked more than twice in a game, one time ever. So now he's going to talk about retiring for 2 months.
Right.
Like, as a motivational tactic to his line.
It's a motivational tactic to right tackle Tristan Wirfs, who had literally a tendon came off the bone in his ankle. He tried to play and he couldn't. Brady saying, maybe you should have. We don't know.
Yeah, I just looked up and said Brady has taken 32 career sacks in 22 years, so it does seem maybe a bit overkill from him to be considering retiring. He gets sacked about 1.5 per season, it looks like, for the past two decades. So
yeah, there's also this, and you can't help but notice when you watch Bucks games, guys don't want to hit him. They don't.
It is true.
They don't want to be the guy to hurt Tom Brady, and I get that. It's not a criticism, but with other quarterbacks, guys will put their whole body weight into a hit.
Yeah, like they want to injure Josh Allen.
And drive a guy right into the turf as hard as possible. Yeah, the goal is to hurt the quarterback. With Brady, sometimes they'll pull up halfway through a sack. They'll pull up and just kind of lay him on the grass. It's incredible to watch.
Yeah, like he's sitting in like the royal box at Wimbledon or something, and they're like doing something very faux pas. You know, they know they're supposed to. I'm sorry, Mr. Brady, I am supposed to sack you. Coach says I'm supposed to sack you.
Right.
But I don't want to. The thing is, like,
I got a little alarmed that he might actually retire when Bruce Arians had been like tweeting through it for a while. He's like, no, there's no way he's going to retire. Like he was just like kept posting like, no, Brady not retiring, dumb, stupid. And then Monday, yeah, he was kind of, all right, well, maybe he's in, hold on a second.
You're right.
Like, hold on just 1 second. He's like, all
yeah.
right.
Yeah,
we believe in Kyle Trask. We believe in Blaine Gabbert.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing,
actually.
You know, Kyle Trask, who they drafted last year, was inactive, was a healthy scratch the whole year. Like
he's bad. I'm a Mizzou fan. I saw him play Mizzou once or twice at Florida. He's bad.
They don't have anybody on their roster who could possibly be their quarterback. So it would be a really rough situation for everybody in that offense if Brady walks. Well,
they're gonna trade for Aaron Rodgers after he retires.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I mean, nevertheless. By the way, he was sacked 22 times this year, not 12.
Really?
12 would be almost, not trying to like live fact check you on air, but it was, just in case you're listening and thought 12 sounded impossible, it was 22 is still almost impossible, to be frank. Like that's shockingly
that.
Few. But so, yeah, I mean, you can see why basically now he's already retired. If he got sacked 22 times, I mean –
Man, all right. Well,
are you trying to say, by the way, that Brady's soft? Is that what you're saying? The guy has played football for 22 years.
No, definitely not that.
Unfortunately, Brady is very. You can't even joke about that. Like Brady is, you got to give it to the guy. He's definitely not soft.
No,
he's many things, but soft is not even close to one of them.
Well, okay, all right. Yes, you're, and I see. So Brady's sacked 22 times. Daniel Jones, who played in 10 games, was sacked 22 times. He was Brady's sack total was around Jacoby Brissett's, which Brissett played in 9 games. So it is something where I believe Brady is being well protected, and I don't think that the physical toll of being sacked and being hit in the pocket is the real reason. I think the real reason is this Bucs team can only go down from here.
Well, I think the real reason is just that he should. I mean, he's 44 and like he can obviously, he's already proven his point. Like he's already won the argument. Like he is like, all right, yeah, fine. You can like do this forever. But I mean, it seems like his wife, Giselle, like genuinely does want him home. Like maybe it's time to go home, Tom. Maybe it's time to go home.
I don't know. I really do think because they got the band back together for this season to make another run. You know, back to back. I really believe he would have retired if he won this year.
Yeah, he just should. There's no reason for him to put his body through it anymore. It's not like he can't. There's no amount of Super Bowls that he can win at this point. There's gonna like change the argument, change the calculus. Like he's already at least in our lifetimes. I mean, no one's gonna like debate who the greatest quarterback is.
No,
it's gonna be annoying. But like he's just clear. I mean, the argument's just over. He won the argument. He should just go enjoy life.
He beat Patrick Mahomes head to head in the Super Bowl. So that's the end of that argument. Even if Mahomes goes on to win multiple Super Bowls, if he fills a whole ring, a whole handful of Super Bowl rings, it'll still be, well, he lost to Brady.
And even if Mahomes catches him, Brady will just unretire at age 54 and win one more and then just retire again. It's fine.
I mean, I'm not putting it out of the realm of possibilities, you know.
Denny with the coaching carousel now in the second interview stage. Bills OC Brian Daboll could be the favorite for the Giants' job after New York hired Bills assistant GM Joe Schoen, I don't know how to say his name yet, as general manager. Daboll is also drawing strong interest from the Dolphins, but you think he'd be a really good fit with the Giants. How would Brian Daboll remake this Giants offensive attack?
Yeah, I believe it's Joe Schoen, and I was corrected on that, by the way.
Yeah, Schoen. I mean, you don't really have to learn how to say GM's names. You only have to write them. You don't say them.
Exactly. So I think Daboll to the Giants makes a lot of sense. There's the Schoen connection. There's the fact that the Bills offense, you know, looked incredible in the postseason after some early season struggles. You know, they really, really got back to putting tons of points on the board, putting tons of yardage out there. So Daboll to the Giants would be, would instantly generate 100 stories about, is Daniel Jones the next Josh Allen?
Which he's not, but yeah, I mean, we're going to write about it though.
The answer is no, but you know, in looking into Dable's philosophy and his, and the way he handled Josh Allen and the Bills offense over the past few seasons, I would be very bullish. I'm sure maybe you would too, on this Giants offense, because despite Jason Garrett and Joe Judge not being able to do anything with these players, they are objectively good players. You know, Daniel Jones has shown that he is a viable quarterback. You have Kadarius Toney, who was electric when healthy and given a full complement of snaps. You have Saquon Barkley, who I don't believe the idea that he's already done. I mean, he has not reached that age yet. I know he had the major injury. I think that he'll be fine in the long run. You have Kenny Golladay, who, you know, not good this year, very good in previous years. So a lot of skill position players that Brian Dable can work with. And I believe that he has like an organizational commitment. He demonstrated this in Buffalo, a commitment to kind of replicate the things that quarterbacks did best coming into the NFL and have done in the NFL. So instead of forcing a system onto the quarterback, they take the strengths of the quarterback and they accentuate it with their game plans. That's what he did with Josh Allen.
So the Giants are still going to have a lot of weapons. Like you said, Kadarius Toney, Saquon Barkley, Sterling Shepard, if he can recover from what is a very, very serious knee injury. Kenny Golladay, you know, has been really banged up the past 2 years. I do worry if maybe Kenny Golladay is kind of like Hakeem Nixing a bit, like breaking down before his time. Just maybe he's taking too many lower body blows, but a lot of intriguing pieces in offense, even with those question marks. But Daniel Jones has 45 touchdowns and passing touchdowns in 38 career games. Like that's like you're playing in like the early 70s, basically. Like that's a touchdown rate that you just don't really see in modern football. And the skill set isn't true, but part of the skill set too, unlike Josh Allen, Daniel Jones has never had any interest in throwing deep. Like despite his proclivity, despite his penchant for turnovers, he's not a deep ball thrower at all. Unlike Josh, like he just doesn't want to throw the deep ball. He didn't throw it again last year, even though Kenny Golladay was in the fold. And the project will be just a lot tougher for Brian Dable than even Josh Allen was. And Josh Allen was quite a project, as
yes.
I remember, those first 2 years.
Yes.
But his raw skill set was still, you know, more impressive. Daniel Jones has an impressive raw skill set, but Daniel Jones is coming out of Duke. Like his arm was just known as just like mid-range, whereas Josh Allen was known as like Uncle Rico, like literally throwing the football over the mountain. Like we knew that he could actually throw the football over the mountain. So, and Dable, it's always interesting. I mean, he had pretty undistinguished stops. Zoomers won't remember. I mean, Brian Dable was a coordinator in the 2010s for the Browns, for the Dolphins, for the Chiefs, all like horrible versions of those teams. And then he went back to Bill Belichick finishing school. He started in Bill Belichick finishing school early in his career. He went back to Belichick finishing school. Then he went to Nick Saban finishing school and has been an elite, genuinely elite coordinator for the Bills. So interesting hire, but Daniel Jones, I just don't know if anyone can save Daniel Jones. He might be in Darnold territory at this point.
Possibly, yeah. I wouldn't discount that. I just had a couple more things on kind of Dable's approach. So his flexibility and willingness to adjust to his players' strengths can be seen in as an offensive coordinator at Alabama. He had basically a 50-50 run-pass split there. That split became a 67-33 in Buffalo last year. So he and this is something, this is a quote from when he was hired as the offensive coordinator for the Bills. A reporter asked, you know, can you explain your offense? Describe your offense. What are the keys? He said, my offense is different every year. Again, it will constantly change based on what we think our players do best. I think that just to have one. Just to have one, you know, here's the playbook and this is what we're going to do. I think that we have to evolve every day. I think that says it all about how he has approached making an elite offense with Josh Allen and the Bills. And this comes from a Josh Allen Bills led offense that looked quite bad for a couple years, you know?
Yeah, that's basically like a lab created type quote you'd want to hear from your coach talking about offense. But the only thing I'll say too is how much of this I wonder is Sean McDermott, who seems to be a brilliant coach, and how much is Brian Daboll. But I mean, it's hard to hear that quote and think that it's not Brian Daboll and that he probably does actually deserve a lot of the credit for the Bills' offensive success and turnaround the past 2 years. So no doubt that after years of hiring like literally Pat Shurmur, Brian Daboll would be he'd be a nice step in the right direction for the New York Football Giants.
So. Yeah. Also, just as far as personnel packages, the Bills obviously use way more four wide receiver sets than the Giants this year. They also use significantly more three wide receiver sets. So it would be a more spread out, I would think that it would be more spread out, more pass heavy type of offense, but you know, he said it changes every year. So we'll see.
It'd be interesting too, if he doesn't get the Giants job, if he did reunite with Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Waddle for the Miami Dolphins.
That would be, yeah.
They don't have as many compelling weapons as the Giants do. And Tua, he's a strange prospect. Still don't really know what to think of Tua. But it would be a very interesting fit down in Miami also.
I'm no Daniel Jones truther, you may know, but I actually would say that Daniel Jones is a more inviting prospect.
You'd probably rather bet just on Daniel Jones's physical profile still.
Right.
And his physical. Just, dude, throw deep every once in a while. My Please. God, man. Denny, you took note of a little noticed Mike Tomlin quote a few weeks ago that he would like Ben Roethlisberger's replacement to be more mobile. Like it was a pretty direct quote. I can't remember what the exact quote was. You can share it with us when I'm done with my spiel here. But the offseason's list of free agent quarterbacks does not have many viable dual threats on it. You highlighted one of them that you think could maybe get a second chance from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, it just kind of came to me, out of the blue, Marcus Mariota to Pittsburgh. Let's get steam behind this. I mean,
start the train.
Tomlin said. I can't find it right now, but yeah, I mean, he said
mobility is a much sought after trait
in
quarterbacks right now.
Yes.
AKA people want mobile quarterbacks. I am now one of those people. Watching Stonehenge for the past 5 years and Ben Roethlisberger, he wants a mobile quarterback.
And he also in his a season ending press conference, Tomlin said several times in almost awkward ways that, Matt Canada, the offensive coordinator for the Steelers, had to deal with what he was given with the hand he was dealt. You know, we couldn't do certain things because of our personnel. Obviously, this is a subtweet of Ben Roethlisberger.
It was more of a quote tweet, really.
Yeah,
and it's funny. He also, I mean, Tomlin did see up close the benefits of mobility because I mean, it's not like Ben Roethlisberger was ever a scrambler, but it's hard to remember now. I mean, he was kind of noted for his pocket mobility in his prime and like being impossible to take down, being such a good pocket mover, someone who would actually take off and run occasionally. No one would ever claim he was a dual threat, he was definitely mobile for his size. And yet Tomlin, he has not seen that now in probably half a decade. And he wants, someone who can actually move.
So Marcus Mariota is a free agent. I'm guessing that you could, that the Steelers or whoever wants to sign him could sign him for very cheap for a very, low risk deal on the team's end. I mean, you know, I think it would be a win-win for everybody.
And it'd be kind of a perfect situation where if they do want to draft a quarterback, so Kevin Colbert is retiring, but he's staying through the draft. He was comfortable taking a prospect out of Miami of Ohio and Ben Roethlisberger. Maybe they want to take someone they think needs a little more time to develop. A perfect guy to pair him with would be Marcus Mariota, who was kind of, it seemed like just a different player in Las Vegas, even though he barely played. Two of the 18 biggest rushing performances of his career came as a Raider.
Yeah.
Even though 22 of his 264 career carries came as a Raider. Basically, when he came in, he was like a heat-seeking missile.
Yes.
As like a rusher. You know, that was one of the biggest criticisms of him in Tennessee. Like, why does this dude like never run? Isn't he supposed to be a dual threat? And he would just never, ever run it. He seemed, maybe it was because he was coming off the bench, like had to make the most of his plays, but it seemed like he had a totally different mentality in Las Vegas.
That's right. I agree. We didn't talk about this at all before the show, but I remember watching him a few times this year and going, since when is Marcus Mariota such a badass?
I know. I had no idea. He seemed just way more jacked up than he did in Tennessee. In Tennessee, he was like Sam Bradford-esque. Like basically, you like could not elicit an emotion from him.
Right.
And with the Raiders, yeah, he was like, you know, banging his helmet into like brick walls, basically.
I'm all for it. Let's get this done, Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, let's get this done. Pair him with a young quarterback, and yeah, let's do this thing. Danny, it is the off season, which of course means it's time for Sean Payton coaching rumors.
Yes.
Do you think that he is finally serious about moving on? It sounds like he wants to like work for like Fox or something, like call some games next year. Right. Maybe like pull an Urban Meyer, like recharge a bit, like watch some games, send out a few subtweets from the broadcast booth, and then get a new job in a year or two. Do you think Sean Payton is going to be coaching the New Orleans Saints in 2022?
I really don't. I think this season, winning as many games as they did, I think they end up winning 9.
I think they did go 9-8.
They nearly made the playoffs, very close. That is an unbelievable coaching job to get that team that far. I mean, if they made the postseason, who cares? They would have been beaten right away. But
demolished.
Yeah, but that team, you know, personnel wise, injury wise, salary cap wise, that team's in hell.
Ian Book wise.
Right. I just can't imagine him wanting to come back. There's never been a better time for him to jump ship, including when Drew Brees retired. When he retired, the team was not in the sort of desperate straits that they are right now as a franchise. I think he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, the mentality in America, like we could kind of like view him as like a quitter, quote unquote, but it would be like well earned for him to like take a break after. Yeah, he was so set in his routine with Drew Brees, and this is such a grinding season. This is like a total, looks like maybe like going to be a top to bottom rebuild the Saints need to embark on. He's almost 60. He's an elder statesman coach. He actually has earned that right to not like suffer. I think only Bill Belichick like would enjoys this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like suffering through the years after the legend retires. Like Sean Payton would be well within his rights to like, yeah, you know, just maybe let me chill a little bit. Like,
yeah,
take a year or two off, then come back like Bruce Arians to like a team that looks like pretty close to compete. And let's get his second. He's given everything he's at that could be reasonably requested to the New Orleans Saints organization. I don't think he would be a quitter if he took a break right now.
Absolutely not. I mean, once Kevin James plays you in a movie, I think that you can go ahead and call it quits. And he'll be back. God, I mean,
he'll be back for sure. I mean,
teams would do anything to have Sean Payton. And if he takes a year off or whatever, a couple years, he'll certainly return, and I'm sure he'll have a lot of success wherever he goes.
Yeah, I don't think it's a situation even where like Saints fans would be mad at him or like regard him as a traitor. It's kind of like the same thing. Tony La Russa retired in St. Louis, and then it was much later, but he came back to coach the White Sox last year. People like weren't like bitter when you give like so much to an organization. I think he's to the point, even with a really intense fan base like the Saints, like that they'll understand and they won't hold it against him. And then Sean Payton will be allowed to live his best life.
Yes.
So, Sean, you do you, Sean. We'll be right back after this.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle, follow your crave.
The NFL playoffs are here, and NBC Sports Edge Plus is giving you a special offer. Get 15% off an Edge Plus annual subscription throughout the playoffs when you use promo code PLAYOFF15. Get every tool for every game at one low price. It is easier than ever to play and wager with confidence when you use NBC Sports Edge Plus. Four more teams were eliminated from the playoffs over the weekend, and we thought this might be a good time to assess the dynasty futures of some of the players who are now golfing, Denny.
Yeah.
Some of the biggest names in the league are on this list, and I think we should start with the biggest, Derrick Henry. Every fantasy analyst on the planet this offseason is going to be telling people to sell high on Derrick Henry. Like, there's going to be people, like, you know, posting this as, like, unique advice. Like, you should sell high on Derrick Henry. And we know every single person, understandably so, is going to be saying to sell high. Not even sell high at this point. Sell Derrick Henry in dynasty. The player's going to be 28. Who has 900 carries over the past 3 years. But Denny, is there any contrarian case for keeping Henry around, like riding him till the wheels fall off on your dynasty league team? Or should you indeed be trying to trade Derrick Henry in dynasty?
I think there is. And I don't say this lightly, but you know, he just turned 28 years old. He has a ton of mileage. It's a different kind of mileage. And in researching and writing the piece I wrote on Derrick Henry back in the summer, I talked with a couple beat writers for the Titans who pointed out, they both pointed out the same thing, which is that Henry delivers hits. He doesn't really take them. And then later on, I reached out to them about the foot injury. They said, you know, they pointed out it's not soft tissue. You know, it's not a hamstring. It's not a calf. It's not this stuff. It was kind of a freak foot break, you know, and that sort of thing happens. So I really do think there is a reason that he could once again prove the exception to the rule, because honestly, the kind of workload that he's had over the past three seasons, he's already like a vast exception to the rule, and the team is dead focused on keeping him upright, keeping him healthy. They have a whole program during the season where they focused on, you know, on making sure that he's okay, making sure that he's 100% for game day. They understand that it's a unique situation. The whole offense still runs through him. I think there is something of a case, especially because who in your dynasty league is going to trade anything worth any real value for Derrick Henry at this point?
And that's the thing, too. Just when it comes to trading someone like Derrick Henry's situation, too, just remember the fact that even just one more year of Derrick Henry could be far more valuable than whatever you get in return. Like, you could get a first-round pick, and then, like me, use it on Jalen Reagor or something, you know? Like just remember that, too. Like, if you're selling, at least make it for, like, young players that you believe in. Yeah. You're going to do it. But, like, don't do it, like, just because it feels like the thing you have to do. And just – in dynasty, sometimes there can be this mentality to like always like get out, like stay ahead, like get out once. It's totally fine to just like run some players into the ground with your team and just keep them to the bitter end, basically, because your team just could be better for it. And even just 1 year of Derrick Henry, that could be so much more valuable than whatever package you get in return. So, of course, if you get a really good offer, if you get some young players you really believe in, then it might be just kind of a no-brainer to trade him. If there's someone like me, like making the calculus like me, like, well, I'd rather just win in 2022 and have Derrick Henry, so I'll make a good offer for Derrick Henry, then take it. But yeah, this is not a situation where it's like to get whatever you can for Derrick Henry.
Yeah. So his teammate, Julio Jones, I think is an entirely different story, you know, because of the kind of injuries and the kind of time missed and the deterioration that's very clear. I really don't think that Henry's deterioration has made itself crystal clear. Does he have 3 years left? Probably not. But I think that there's every reason to believe that he has at least one, possibly two, really good seasons left where the Titans are going to treat him like they treated him last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah, man, that's the thing. If he stays healthy, he's getting over 300 carries. So it's just like,
right.
And even if even if the age curve continues to catch up with him, like that doesn't really matter if he's getting that insane of a workload. He's still going to be a huge dynasty league asset. So it's not black and white with Derrick Henry. What is black and white, apparently, Denny, is that within seconds of our Sean Payton spiel, he has informed the Saints that he's retiring, is what he claims.
Oh, well.
So he's not going to be coaching the Saints in 2022. He's supposedly retiring. I mean, come on, man. Like, let's say you're taking a break.
Stop.
Like, not a soul on earth that believes you're actually retiring.
Just say you'll be coaching the Dolphins in 3 years.
It's kind of embarrassing to claim it's a retirement, but it's fine. He's not going to be coaching the Saints in 2022. So that's the way this business works, folks. Sometimes you talk about something. Yeah. And then it's within quite literally seconds. It's not irrelevant. I think our talk still like holds up on.
Oh yeah, sure. I do think that this raises serious concerns and questions about Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas.
Who's Michael Thomas? I'm gonna look up that guy's Pro Football Reference. I don't even know who that is.
Right, he last played in 2002.
Yeah.
Without Sean Payton with no quarterback, I guess Taysom is signed for years and years and years and is going to get, you know, $1 billion, but that's a really bad situation for both those guys.
It was a bad idea to give Taysom Hill the entire Federal Reserve Bank of New Orleans. I don't know how that's going to work out for Sean Payton's successor.
It was questionable.
It was first guessed at the time. Boy, yeah, Alvin Kamara. He was someone who's kind of running on fumes, and I might be more concerned about Alvin Kamara in Dynasty than I would Derrick Henry. Just a guy who has really never been, you know, the three down back until last year. He wasn't good in the role. You know, there were a lot of factors that were beyond his control. But I would say it looks a lot bleaker the next 2 years for Alvin Kamara in Dynasty than it does for Derrick Henry.
So something I didn't mention when I was talking about Ezekiel Elliott on a podcast a couple weeks ago. On this podcast was that Alvin Kamara kept popping up around Ezekiel Elliott as far as like elusiveness and breakaway rate. It was concerning. I mean, that it seemed to me that there has been a step lost, and perhaps it's injury related. Perhaps it's the fact that defenses only have to focus on stopping Alvin Kamara without any real other weapons in that offense.
I just got a text from my Dolphins fan best friend so first off, every group text I'm in is basically just lulling at the notion that Sean Payton is actually retiring.
Right.
And my Dolphins friend said, Stephen Ross needs to write his bleep a humongous check.
Yes.
It's going to be, we'll see. His retirement could literally last like a week.
Listen, I mean, go to Miami and just stay retired, but coach the Dolphins.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. That's what Jimmy Johnson did.
That's what he did. And it was a disaster, but it was probably great for him.
It was, a disaster is a bit strong for the Jimmy Johnson. He did lose 63-7 in the playoffs, but
I was a fan. It was a disaster.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Real quick, of running backs who saw at least half their team's carries this year, Alvin Kamara's elusive rating was right around Leonard Fournette and Sony Michel. So it's, not the best.
Those are two running backs playing deep into the playoffs, Denny. I don't know what you're talking about.
You're right. They're winners. They are winners.
They're winners. After Derrick Henry, the next biggest name on this list is Davante Adams. How in the world should dynasty managers approach Aaron Rodgers' uncertain future and Davante Adams' free agency when it comes to evaluating Davante Adams, who remained the best all-around receiver in the NFL still in 2022, but he just has so many variables, quarterback variables, team variables. I do think he'll be back with the Packers. Even though they're in salary cap hell, they're going to find some way to put the franchise tag on this guy. I don't know how they'll do it, but they always – every time I think, they're $1.2 billion over the salary cap, they still somehow always like franchise tag an edge rusher for $21 million. I think he'll probably be back at the Packers. But what are your thoughts on Davante Adams and Dynasty going forward?
Yeah, it is a they can't keep getting away with this kind of situation.
It is.
They're $45 million over the cap. I think that they're the only, I think the only real option with Davante Adams, if the Packers are intent on keeping him around, is to slap the franchise tag on him. But I can't imagine that he would be willing to come back if Rodgers is gone. What he's going to waste one of the last years in the prime of his career catching passes from Jordan Love? No.
I think he'll do it if so, it's weird. The best way for him to actually come back would be, for the Packers' point of view, an extension with a really low 2022 cap number. So if they're actually willing to give him like the 5-year deal he's going to want, I think he'll sign it. It's just hard to see them actually doing that. And it's just one of those brain buster situations that on January 25th, the day we're recording this, there's kind of just no realistic way to actually prognosticate this one. But because the easiest way, yeah, to keep him would be with a multi-year extension that keeps his cap number down.
Yeah,
this year. And like he'll sign, he'll probably, I mean, he's a competitor, but I mean, I'm sure he likes money. And if they give him the deal that he deserves, I think he will sign it.
Yeah, and this is he's 28 years old. This is the last major deal he's going to get from whoever gives it to him. Yeah, Matt LaFleur said Tuesday that there would be no rebuild, which is something any coach would say. I'm not breaking news here, but that was in response to Aaron Rodgers saying, I will not be part of a rebuild. So I guess there's an outside chance that they keep everybody, and by everybody, I mean Adams and Rodgers, because that's the whole offense, apparently, as we saw against the 49ers. They'll keep them together for one more year, maybe, but I think there is a pretty rough transition coming for the Packers.
Well, it's really a good sign that Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur are already communicating through the media.
Yes.
You always love to see that.
I do wonder, can these guys talk? Can we get them in a room together? Have they ever talked?
Now, Rodgers, too, used to be famous for never giving anything up to the media. Now he gives up, some would say, far too much to the media these days. Real quick, Devontae, I think it's another situation, Dynasty, where people might get a little too scared by the uncertainty. I think he's still the best receiver in the league. And even if it's Jordan Love, even if he stays with the Packers, even if he plays with Jordan Love, it's not like he's not going to get 12 targets a game.
No, but I don't even know if you could draft him as a top 5 receiver.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be, it will be tough. Yeah.
Jordan Love is bad. Also, the connection, and this is tough to measure statistically, but the connection between Rodgers and Adams is just absurd.
Preternatural. It's preternatural.
Yes. That's the word I was looking for. And it really is. It shows itself every week. There's no situation that they can't get out from under. It's incredible. So, he's not going to have that with Love. Also, Jordan Love's not good. Also, the offense is probably going to be bad. I don't know.
Well, you think Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams doing work for the Washington Commanders in 2022?
Oh, baby. Now we're talking. we are cooking with oil now.
We are. Gabriel Davis is 22 years old and just had a 4-touchdown divisional round game, Denny. Stephon Diggs is going on 29, and while he had a very good year, it was much quieter than his 2020. Are we having changing fortunes in the Bills receiver core and dynasty, or can this be Steph Diggs still an elite dynasty player and Gabriel Davis is still an ascending dynasty league player? What is the lay of the land with these Bills receivers?
Well, I think the perception of Gabriel Davis went from underrated fantasy asset to number one receiver in NFL history.
I'm glad to have him on my team. I'll say that.
After
bidding starts at 3 first rounders.
After that explosion against Kansas City. So any idea that one may have had going into the offseason, I'm going to acquire Gabriel Davis on the cheap, that's dead. You're going to have to give up the whole house in order to acquire Gabriel Davis.
3 rounders. This is a starting point.
Yeah, it is funny. Every fantasy analyst worth his or her salt last summer said Bills should get Gabriel Davis into the offense as a full-time player. And the Bills said, instead, we're going to have a 34-year-old Emmanuel Sanders who hasn't been good in 8 years. We're going to have him do the thing. He's going to be the wide receiver too. And then as soon as they gave the full-time gig to Davis, he goes berserk. I'm just saying that sometimes we're right. Sometimes the fantasy people are right. But anyway, about him and Diggs, I think that if you want Davis now, you're going to have to be prepared to just pay up all the way to acquire him. But I also think, like, on the other side, Diggs is probably a very underrated asset this
year. Yeah, I was going to say, do you think he's to the point where he's, like, undervalued? Even though, you know, he's in his late 20s now, but I think he's still only, like, 28 and should still have 2 or 3 years of, like, really solid prime left.
So his usage stats and almost all of his peripheral numbers were fine this year. You know, our colleague Pat Corain pointed this out in several columns throughout the season. It all looks good. Like, for my Target Dakota column, I wrote a ridiculous amount saying I don't see anything that says that the Bills are not treating him as the same kind of receiver that he was in 2020. Now, the touchdown, you know, touchdowns are fluky. Touchdowns are volatile. We know that. The touchdown didn't happen this year. They just didn't. Also, the deep connections, also volatile, didn't happen for him. So I do think that he could be a guy who is undervalued headed into next season.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Gabe Davis, I mean, we know that we get, like, too excited about players, but, you know, someone we were already excited about. And I do think it's worth, like, getting very bullish on him because, again, he was a fourth-round rookie who forced his way onto the field last year. That doesn't really happen. He's a guy this year where the second they gave him the opportunity he deserved this year, he immediately took advantage of it and just started going nuts down the stretch. It wasn't like this four-touchdown game was totally out of nowhere. He had started producing again down the stretch when he got the opportunity. And, you know, coming into the NFL from USF, his profile was a guy who caught deep balls, who did huge damage on targets of over 20 plus yards. He's lived up to that now both years in the NFL. He has maybe the biggest armed quarterback in the NFL. And Josh, it's just hard. I feel like it's a situation where we should just believe what we're seeing. Like, okay, yeah, this guy just really is awesome. It's not like in our head. It's not like, you know, one of these like things we cling to in Dynasty. It's not like some dead end situation. Like, this is gonna be the year for Jalen Darden. Like, it seems to be quite for real.
Oh, yeah.
And if you want to go out and make an aggressive offer for Gabriel Davis, it's not dumb.
Yeah. Back to Diggs for 1 second. Stephon Diggs was second in air yards, only behind Justin Jefferson, and by a good amount, by the way. But, you know, so his, like I said, everything points to him still maintaining that absolute number one role in a very productive and very usually pass heavy Buffalo offense.
You mean Steph Diggs could finish as the wide receiver one next year?
Sure.
It wouldn't be crazy at all. So absolutely stay the course of Stephon Diggs. Because, again, the receiver core is big enough for the two of them. Like, it's big enough for a huge Stephon Diggs year and, like, a 1,000-yard, take-a-step-forward Gabriel Davis year. There's more than enough room for both those outcomes in this Bills receiver core. Another situation with Packers-type uncertainty is the Bucs skill core, as we highlighted with Tom Brady, considering retirement. It's most notable with Chris Godwin, who is still only 26 in February, but he's recovering from a torn ACL. He's going to have free agent uncertainty, his quarterback uncertainty. I think the odds that he re-signed with the Bucs actually really went up when he suffered the injury, because now he might be forced to take, you know, like a one-year prove-it type deal. So I think there's pretty solid odds he'll actually be back with the Bucs. But is he just too risky, or is he someone the fantasy managers should be like trying to like pounce and get a bargain on, Chris Godwin? Or is it just too risky of a situation? Just let it develop and whatever happens, happens.
I do think that there's a fair amount of risk baked in to his situation. Because it all hinges on Brady coming back, you know. I don't know, like we talked about earlier, I don't know how likely that is. These type of injuries used to be way more scary than they are today. I don't doubt that Chris Godwin will come back at 100%. But, you know, if just like with the Packers, like if they have a subpar quarterback in there, you know, Chris Godwin is going to have a huge drop in probably in efficiency, in overall production. I know he did it with Jameis Winston, but that was in an.
I was going to say, he has done it with two different quarterbacks.
Extremely high, but that was extremely high volume, very aggressive. The pieces all fell into place that season for that Bucs offense to generate two huge seasons for Mike Evans and Godwin. So I don't know if we can count on that going forward.
We do know that he's lost the variable Chris Godwin of one of the greatest receivers in league history being in the receiver core, because I don't think the Bucs will be re-signing Antonio Brown. Seems unlikely.
It's not. You can get good odds in Vegas if you want to go in
there. You know, I'll tell you, Denny, if Tom Brady retires, do you know which former number one overall pick who is still only in his 20s is a free agent this offseason, Denny?
No.
It's Jameis Winston. And it might be time for the prodigal son to come home to Bruce Arians and command fantasy wide receiver one seasons for both Mike Evans and Chris Godwin.
You could do way worse if you're the Bucs.
I actually think there would be like a 5 to 10% chance of that happening. I used the word finishing school early. He went to Sean Payton finishing school.
Yeah.
Come back to Tampa, sling the ball around the yard.
Right. He's skinny Jameis now. He had LASIK.
He had LASIK. I was going to say he can see. It seems like a pretty big development in his career. I think I would be trying to acquire Chris Godwin and die. Maybe I'm getting too galaxy brain, but the guy is a number one if a team lets him be a number one. Like you said, ACL, it happened late in the year, but pretty good chance he'll be ready for week one. They said the recovery has gotten a lot more straightforward. We see guys come back very strongly. I mean, he's done it with Jameis Winston before time. I think he will be a really, really undervalued dynasty league player. I mean, it's before Tom Brady announces he's coming back, maybe take advantage of the uncertainty, put an offer out there.
Yeah.
Chris Godwin. Elsewhere in this Bucs receiver core, is Mike Evans, is he getting into Derrick Henry territory where he's a big bodied guy who's taken a ton of hits? He's within striking distance of 30 years old. Is it time to start like sunsetting Mike Evans in dynasty leagues? Or is he another guy too, just stay the course, ride it out? Or a situation too where like if you know there's going to be skepticism of Mike Evans, should you be trying to make offers to get Mike Evans on the cheap?
Oh, man. Yeah. A guy like Mike Evans, this just enormous receiver, doesn't age well. Typically, really, really does not age well.
No.
So I would be really hesitant to kind of overthink it, outthink myself, and be like, you know what? No. He's the exception. We're going in on getting Evans at 28 years old. He's 28, right? That's what you said.
I believe he's 28. Yeah, I said striking distance of 30, which I think was a euphemism for 28.
Yeah, right.
Otherwise, I would have just said he's going to turn 30.
That sounds right.
He's practically 30. I mean,
yeah, it would take a lot of faith in Mike Evans, the player, to really want to acquire him this offseason. I will say that scenario where Tampa brings back Jameis Winston would accelerate, you know, the Mike Evans one more shot type storyline.
It is interesting. Mike Evans, but he turns 29 in August, by the way. So yeah, I mean, he's practically 30. Yeah. I mean, the guy, he's 18 months shy of 30 or 30.
It's practically.
A weird thing about Mike Evans is that he's not a PPR guy. Past three reception totals are 67, 70, and 74. So it's kind of like when you're trading for him, like, what are you even really getting? I mean, you're getting 13 touchdowns the past 2 years, but it is kind of, yeah, maybe that's one to not galaxy brain, Mike.
Well,
Evans.
His production with Brady has been different than it was with Winston, in that Brady has, you know, especially in 2020, just force fed Evans in the red zone, and especially inside the 10 yard line. You know, that's not how he made his, that's not how he produced for fantasy with Winston. And so unless that's like part of the team's offense to just throw it to Mike Evans every time they get within striking distance of the end zone, then I could see him taking a pretty significant step back in 2022.
We got a few more of these. I mean, Leonard Fournette is heading to free agency. There's basically no way this dynamic is recreated. Even if he resigns with the Bucs, I feel like this PPR Leonard Fournette dynamic can't be created. Like, he finally got a little better as a pass catcher, like where he wasn't letting it clang off his hands every time. But it seems like they still don't actually want him to be like the pass catching hurry up back, do they?
It seems like they do. According to my lineups where I played Gio Bernard last week, it seems like they really are fine with it. And I don't get it. But Bruce Arians puts a lot of trust in players. He really trusts Leonard Fournette to carry the workload and to be the pass catching back. You know, I nothing against Lombardi Lenny. He seems like a perfectly fine guy. I will say that the Brady led Bucks offense produces so many expected fantasy points. When Fournette was out in the wild card round, the Tampa running backs combined for 40 expected fantasy points. 40.
Oh, man.
So what I'm saying is that almost any running back can do what Fournette is doing. There's no reason.
It actually is true.
Needs to bring him back.
It is the role. And not, but you said he seems like a good guy. Tell that to Tom Coughlin, who fined him for sitting on the Jaguars bench wrong when he was hurt. Just monstrous behavior. He sat on the bench wrong.
I forgot about that.
I think he fined him literally because he like laughed. Like he was injured and he didn't like that he was sitting on the bench. He like wanted him to stand. And then Leonard Fournette was like, I was hurt. I'm like,
it's the important
thing. I want to be on my feet.
You know, with the Jags, it's always the important things. You know, they really focus on the critical aspects.
Like, I was hurt. Like, I don't keep me off my feet. Doesn't that make sense? And then he like laughed and then he got fined. I think he also, I think the NFLPA got that fine rescinded because it was so bad. And
that's the most Tom Coughlin. I want to say
Mike Coughlin.
It's the most Tom Coughlin thing I've ever heard.
It was. Devin Singletary became a starter down the stretch, but now he's headed into the final year of his rookie deal. Even though Devin Singletary was good after finally being given like the every down role, the Bills might still want to try to get better in their backfield. Do you think he makes sense as a sell high in Dynasty, Denny, or should you just, you have a new asset with a new role, just ride it out and be happy with Devin Singletary for 2022?
I tend to say, you know, to go with the latter. I think that, you know, I'm going to cite elusive rating for the 15th time in the show, but he was fourth. He was fourth among all running backs and really, really solid in the second half of the season. But his, you know, those peripheral stats, like yards before contact, yards after contact, they were always good for Devin Singletary. It was always kind of a mystery as to why he wasn't getting the full workload or why the team really wouldn't commit to him as the every down back, and especially the early down back, you know, because for a while they were sprinkling him in as a pass catcher, but not the early down guy. So that was always a mystery. But once they finally committed to that, and also the philosophical shift to a more a balanced offense, using six offensive linemen occasionally in the season's final weeks to really establish the run was good to see. I think that, you know, despite Brian Daboll definitely being gone, I think that he did prove himself as the guy, as the guy who's going to head into next season as the primary ball carrier.
Yeah, and I thought he was always clearly better than Zach Moss. I just wasn't sure what this dalliance with Zach Moss. I mean, they wanted the power near the goal line, but he just never provided that. Devin Singletary is a better pass catcher. He's just a better pure runner. I never thought it never made any sense, and they thankfully learned that lesson before it was too late. And I think in theory, they would still maybe want to have like a better overall running game where they might be getting leery of having to rely so much on Josh Allen scrambles. You know, they learned too that midway through the season that they just couldn't put it all in the, like they needed some sort of backup plan. So the Bills do seem more serious about the run, but this is hard to see them investing like serious draft or free agent capital.
Right. As far as Dynasty goes, I'm sure people are pointing out as we speak that Devin Singletary will be 25 years old by the start of next season. You know, it's not exactly young for a guy who just,
it's not kind
of
young, but like, I mean, he's going to be sort of young for a fourth year pro. You're right. It's not young in terms of like Dynasty asset running backs, like usually by 22,
but establishing himself at 24.
Yeah, yeah, that is a red flag. That is true.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, never mind. We're dumb. just don't even try. Just release Devin Singletary.
I'm just saying. If you have him on your roster, what I'm saying is don't say absolutely not. You know, like,
yeah, yeah,
like
no, that's true. It's actually probably a very sensible token to cash in. You have Devin Singletary around. Yeah, just cut him. Just resist him. Don't get in any bad situations, Devin Singletary. Just cut him.
I wouldn't do that.
Do not do that. that's it on the Dynasty talk. Real quick to end the show, we're going to have a much longer preview for the championship games on Thursday with myself, Matt Straub, Denny, and John Daigle. But we thought we would take a look at the one key matchup in both of this weekend's conference championship games. Denny, what do you think the key matchup is in the Bengals' trip to Kansas City?
Will the Chiefs shade coverage and or double team Jamar Chase? Because that is something they refused to do, as Jamar Chase just eviscerated them in their late season matchup. So, you know, and the Chiefs, they have to give their defenders some help containing Jamar Chase. The Titans did this last week against Chase, you know, didn't exactly contain him totally. But, you know, way more than the Kansas City secondary did in that late season matchup. So I think that will be a critical element to how this game will go.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything to overthink. I mean, Jamar Chase is probably the single most important player in this game in terms of an X factor. I mean, he had the 16th most receiving yards in NFL history the last two times. The last time these two teams played in December with his 266. And one of my early talking points in the game is, like, there's no one real area where the Bengals have the advantage on the Chiefs. Even with the top two weapons, Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, you probably still rather take Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. But the real advantage, I mean, could just be Jamar Chase is almost nearing the point where, like, he's like the best non-quarterback on the field in any game where he's playing. And there seems to be almost no path to victory for the Bengals where Jamar Chase does not go just totally nuts.
Right.
And the Chiefs could be missing Tyrann Mathieu in the concussion protocol. They did just allow a 200-yard game to Gabriel Davis. And just, can Jamar Chase go nuts again against this Chiefs team? It is tough that he just – like, he's not taking them by surprise this week. And that's a pretty tough factor for the Bengals. But yeah. I think it's the single most important matchup in this entire game is Jamar Chase versus the Chiefs secondary.
Chase has gotten to the point where he had a 100-yard game last week, and it felt very disappointing. It felt like a letdown.
Yeah, he has 642 yards over his past five games.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, as the Zoomers would say. Denny, what is the key matchup for 49ers at Rams?
I honestly, and it seems very simple and self-explanatory, but can Jimmy Garoppolo not break his team's spine in half against the Rams? Can he not make these brutal, brutal mistakes down the stretch or at any point in the game, really? Because the team has everything going for it. You know, Debo Samuel is just like taking souls on every time he touches the ball. Elijah Mitchell is producing when given the chance. I mean, and given a monster workload whenever he's healthy. You know, they have George Kittle if they ever need to pass. But it's, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, how many almost pick sixes did he throw against the Packers?
Three. It was quite literally three or four.
I counted three. It could have been four. Maybe one I blacked out on. I mean, I actually was like jumping up, like covering my eyes when he threw some of those balls. So if he can't improve, he has the thumb thing, he has the shoulder thing. I don't know if he can. I don't know if he can be solid, and the team would have to then rely on crazy things like a block punt for a touchdown to win. So if he can't be better, then I think the Niners lose pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, he was throwing wounded doves in Green Bay, basically. And it'll be good for him to get out of the sub-zero weather when you've got two injuries. I mean, can't imagine the way a thumb feels when it's 0 degrees. So maybe just by virtue of that alone, he'll be better. But yeah, it's another thing where there's no you don't need any deeper thought to this game. It comes down to Jimmy Garoppolo. And he's going to have to make plays. Like, they're not going to get by on – they're not going to be able to hide Jimmy in this game,
right?
Basically, the way they were able to the past 2 weeks. He's going to have to make plays. He's going to have to not give the game away. And I really do think it's as simple as the game coming down to that. And we'll go much deeper on this on Thursday, though. I'm thinking myself, Denny, John, and Matt. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out Denny's excellent conference championship preview when it posts later this week. They've been just amazing through the wild card divisional rounds. I will be reading it.
Thank you,
Denny. Check out everything. We've got a lot of good stuff. Pat Crane's walkthrough. coming later this week. Our daily doses every day, breaking down the news heading into the conference championship game. So stay on the site. Wait for the next podcast. It's coming Thursday. For Denny, I'm Pat. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you later.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.